This is my record in service of the Women's Army Auxiliary Corps and the Women's Army Corps in World War II. I'm Roxy Remley. I graduated from high school at Darlington, Indiana in 1937, attended business college in Racine, Wisconsin, living with my brother and his family. I was employed in an office in Racine, Wisconsin, until joining the Women's Army Auxiliary Corps in August 13, 1942. Sworn in at Milwaukee, I was sent to basic training at Fort Des Moines, Iowa, reporting on August 17th. 3 weeks of basic training was followed by a training period in motor transport school. My first assigned duty in the Women's Army Auxiliary Corps, in which we call WACS, was to become the driver for the post chaplain. By November, I had applied and was accepted for officer candidate school. Graduation from OCS, January 23, 1943, as a third officer. Immediately, I received orders top secret to Boeing Field, Washington, D.C. I learned upon arrival that it meant I'd be assigned to a composite gun battery outside the District of Columbia. Three other WAC officers had the same orders from my OCS class. Gun batteries covered the East Coast at this time and were part of our Coast Artillery Anti-Aircraft Eastern Defense Command. This composite battery, made up of men and women, was requested by General George C. Marshall to be an experiment. Could women learn to operate radar equipment which controlled 90-millimeter guns, which were handled by men? The battery was to be known as Battery X, made up from borrowed equipment of other batteries in the area for the trial experiment. Battery X was located in a combat area, and women at that time were not supposed to be sent to combat areas. Thus, the need for orders to read top secret. Nazi U-boats and planes created havoc at this time on the East Coast. 56 enlisted women and we four officers received a few weeks training on the radar equipment and were in business to defend our sector of the military district on the East Coast. I was assigned three jobs, motor pool, mess, and executive officer of our battery, along with a male officer in the same positions. These assignments were rotated with other female officers. Throughout, men and women were billeted, of course, in separate locations within the camp. The mess hall was shared by all. In early spring, we were trucked to a Delaware beach to test this experiment by tracking and shooting down a sleeve trailing from the back of a plane which would fly by. Guns and equipment were transported to the beach and the battery was in full operation. Women lived in beach houses and men, most of them I think were in tents. We ate K rations for 2 or 3 days. The female range crew blind tracking with the 268 and the radar and the height finder and a director brought the 90-millimeter guns on target. The WAC commanding officer gave the command to fire. The target fell. Of course, that was a sleeve, not the plane. General Marshall's experiment was a success. Women could replace men on radar equipment if the need should develop. But the scene was changing here by summer of 1943. Plans were developing, and there was the plan for the offensive in Europe. D-Day was the aim. Our composite Battery X was to be disbanded in the late summer of 1943, and I volunteered for overseas duty. Most of the women in our unit did. We were sent back to Bowling Field to await these new ventures for women. However, some WAC officers and enlisted women had already arrived in London as part of the Eisenhower headquarters. I left for England on March 4, 1944, sailing on the liner Ile de France, landing at Southampton 13 days later with 800 women and 10,000 GIs on board. I was a second officer by this time, equivalent to first lieutenant, assigned to the headquarters of the Service of Supply, United Kingdom Base, WAC Detachment. With a few hundred enlisted women, we were located at Cheltenham, about 80 miles from London. We were billeted in the country at Oakley Farms, and I served as the unit's executive officer, which comprised of about everything. Enlisted women worked in the headquarters of the Service of Supply. Weekly, we visited orphanages in Cheltenham, where children had been moved from London during the Blitz of London that began, of course, in 1940. Hundreds of children were living in town, and both GIs and our women always took them something, such as an orange or candy or pencil, paper. They had so very little, and they were certainly appreciative of the things that our people did with them and for them. The awesome D-Day arrived June 6, 1944. We knew it was happening the night of June 5th when the sky was covered solidly with planes. No one slept. We were outside watching the planes go over in some very, very bad weather. Within hours, planes were returning to hospitals all over England with the injured and those who had lost their lives. As our forces advanced in Europe, our Service of Supply headquarters began moving to London. Our women were being transferred there too. And so our detachment was to be closed, and I was the last to leave Cheltenham. My duty was to close out the company and move into London in October. When I arrived, the V2s were exploding over much of the city. Nazis had used buzz bombs previously, a Flying Vengeance 1, it was known as, and it was now being replaced. If the V1s, the Vengeance bomb, buzz bombs as they were known, could be heard, they could be heard, and maybe one could take cover before it hit the ground and exploded. But it wasn't that way with the V2s. Nothing could be heard or seen until they exploded on the ground. Well, we endured this.
Okay?
Yes, we endured this until VE Day, April 7, 1945. They dropped day and night. I was never close to an explosion, and none of our women were injured. Londoners, of course, seemed to be used to it. They had lived and died with it since the bombing began in 1940. But nothing kept us from parading in Hyde Park every Saturday morning. all the women and GIs attached to the Services of Supply Headquarters, we filled Hyde Park. In the spring, there came a need to plan for a celebration of the third anniversary of the Women's Army Corps. Also, we were no longer an auxiliary to the Army. We were now a part of it. The victory in Europe had been won, and now we would celebrate this third anniversary with an invitation to Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth to visit us. Word came down from headquarters that she had accepted. Arriving at our offices at 37 Upper Grosvenor Street on 12 May 1945, she stepped from her limousine, hand extended, and greeted each of us three officers. The tour proceeded with our commanding officer and our first sergeant and the general from headquarters. I simply returned to my office. The Queen reached the fifth floor of three billets by stairway, visiting with enlisted women at their bunks. The tour group returned to my office when Her Majesty sat down at my desk to write her signature on the Palace Athene poster that we had designed. The WAC emblem was a replica of the Greek goddess of victory. As the Queen departed the last billet, we had all gathered at that location on Park Street around the corner from these offices. PX Sergeant Francis Stewart rushed to the Park Street entrance with a box wrapped in paper, presenting it to Her Majesty as a gift for her daughters, Stewart said. It caused an immediate rush by the Secret Service to possess the box. We knew nothing about our women's plan to make this presentation. We later learned that the box contained candy bars from the PX. The summer of 1945 was a waiting period for shipment of all Army personnel back to the States or to the Pacific Theater. Our armed forces had not yet reached Japan for their surrender. In order to occupy this time for those going to the U.S., recreational activities were planned, and I was coaching a softball team. My team won the regional tournament in the United Kingdom, and so we were then flown to Nice, France, for the finals. I don't recall our wins and losses there. No doubt the surroundings of the Riviera had grabbed my attention. I closed out the London detachment in October of 1945. My third closing in 3.5 years of service. I was transferred to a staging area. My number came up for a November 5 sailing date on the Queen Mary to return to the States. On a 5-day sail, we arrived in New York Harbor with thousands of GIs and WACs on board. Traveling by train to Fort Des Moines, Iowa, where I began, I was separated from service and back home again in Indiana at Crawfordsville, November 12, 1945. With the help of the GI Bill, I finished a college education with a Master of Fine Arts degree majoring in art. I came to teach at Georgia Southern College, 1950, now a university, retiring in 1976. Retirement years have been productive in painting, exhibiting, and travels to Europe, Egypt, Greece. In 1982, Georgia Watson, who had been commanding officer of the WAC units in London, and I returned to London. We learned by a procedure to ask for an audience with our now Queen Mother. By way of our embassy and a letter to her lady-in-waiting, we had an invitation to visit Her Majesty. We found ourselves at the front door of Clarence House, being welcomed by the doorman to step inside. In a few minutes, the reception doors were opened, and here stood the Queen Mother with her hand extended to greet us. She said at once that she remembered well the 1945 visit to our detachment. We gave her a photograph of that visit. She looked at it, saying, "I'll never forget that hat. It was the only one I had." We chatted easily about Diane and Charles' recent marriage and departed in 10 minutes. In March of 2000, I was in southern France. An occasion developed where I was talking with some British people. An old gentleman said to me, "But you must send her greetings. It's her 100th, you know." Well, I came home thinking about that. Painting, my profession, what could I do? It ended by using a slide that I had of a very large oil painting of wild daisies in blues and yellows. And I painted it in 1999, transferring that by computer to the front of an embossed folded card. This verse was typed in script inside. The poem was written by a very able poet friend of mine, Libby Smith, of Statesboro, Georgia. And here's the poem. On this fourth day of August 2000, I salute to Her Majesty, a true national treasure, whose life has been an example of grace and charm without measure, who has seen her country, England, through its many joys and tears, with her special radiance for now 100 years. All the world rejoices and is deeply grateful, too, that we can share a portion of this century with you. Sincerely, signed, Roxy Remley. I enclosed a letter explaining my part in the 1945 event and a photo duplicating the picture of the Queen and Captain Watson taken on that day, 12 May 1945. A letter arrived the following week from Her Majesty's secretary saying, "I've laid your greetings before Her Majesty," and so forth. A beautifully written letter thanking me for the birthday greetings to Her Majesty. On 12 May 2001, I attended a dedication of a newly built U.S. Army Women's Museum at Fort Lee, Virginia. I had sent them the entire collection of letters, the Queen's signature, photographs, and so forth concerning these events with Her Majesty from 1945 to 2000 events. Dedication day at Fort Lee, when I walked into the new museum, there lay on the counter a scrapbook open to the picture of Queen Elizabeth sitting at my desk signing her name, Elizabeth R., to the Palace Athene made a poster board. I was not visible in the picture, standing nearby, but I surely remember the occasion clearly. It is easy to recall all these events occurring roughly 60 years ago, representing only 3.5 years of my 83. It was also a great step for women to make a contribution to World War II. Many did greater things than I, but whatever job each of us filled, we've left the service glad not to have missed a part in breaking this new ground for women through the Women's Army Auxiliary Corps and the Women's Army Corps. Roxy Rimley, Professor Emerita of Art, 4 Preston Drive, Statesboro, Georgia, 30458, April 2003.